Cool Oldies 1450 WTHU, in a continuing effort to serve this community, wants to keep you informed on important local issues that affect you. The following is an interview on one of the most important subjects we can think of, educating our children.
All right, welcome to Cool Oldies 1450. We've got some very special guests in our studio, and we're going to talk a little bit about the education system in Frederick County. The group that's with us is Transparency in Education. It's a grassroots organization right here in Frederick County. We have Jim Lehman here with us. Jim, thank you for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Pleasure. And Tom Newmark.
Tom Newmark, yeah, thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about Transparency in Education. What is it?
Well, Transparency in Education was started back in the latter part of 2021 through a series of events I won't go through now, but a lot of things triggered the need for an organization that could provide insight into what's happening within the school system, because it was difficult for parents to get information. So it didn't matter if it was curriculums or policies or activities or academics or whatever. They had a beautiful website that didn't tell many people many things. And then I realized through conversations with some of the people that were in charge of the school systems at that time, the president of the school board, that superintendent at that time, there was a lot of things going on that parents really needed to know. And that was a genesis for it. So we started this program, built a website, built a newsletter, built a following, and then decided to get information out on everything from academics to his critical race theory and the principles of critical race theory and finding its way into the school system, his gender ideology finding its way into classrooms at a high level and so forth. And so that was the agenda. And so we've grown since then, and we continue to try to provide that information, and we try to work with the school board to get it out there.
So you're a nonprofit organization. You're not political. It's basically grassroots parents and taxpayers who care about education in the county.
That's correct. We have launched, at this point, no funding, but we plan to do that in the future. But right now, we're a self-funded organization that just tries to get information to parents and tries to get parents active and involved in the school system so that they can figure out, is my child being exposed to the types of things that I want them to be exposed to? And is the school system itself providing the type of training that I think they should be training?
When did you start?
Start the program?
When were you formed as an organization?
We actually became a nonprofit over the summer last year, but we were working without being incorporated since about January of 2022. And prior to that, it was just organizing and providing information through emails and meeting with groups around Maryland, because there are a lot of groups that do similar things. The Moms for Liberty is one, Voices for Freedom is another, United Against Racism in Education is in Montgomery County. And we started to meet with them and then do some testifying down in Annapolis on some bills that Senator Reedy had put through, and Michael Hoff was a big proponent of what we were trying to do, which was just to get information to people at the time. So actually organizing in early 2022 and then incorporating, we had some things going on.
So the whole genesis for this was that you felt there just wasn't enough information being shared with parents about their child's education.
Yeah, and the fact that the school system had shifted away from what parents really were aware of. For example, parents think that every day their kids go to school and learn how to count and how to spell and how to color within the lines, and then later on science and English and all the things that people are learning. And it had shifted tremendously away from that as the number one priority schools and more into social and emotional learning and now diversity, equity, and inclusion. And that shift has almost pushed academics to a lesser priority. One of the things I had realized when I was doing all this was through attending every committee meeting, every Board of Education meeting, and then talking to people who were involved in the process within the school system, that academics was never on any agenda in any one of those meetings. They never talked about academics. They talked about a lot of things. Anti-racism committee, the FLAC committee, the curriculum committee. They talked about a lot of things, but they never talked about academics. Were our parents aware of that? Are parents aware of what's happening? Are parents aware of how gender ideology is taught? Are they aware of the principles of the types of things that are happening? And so it was easy to build a coalition of group of people, because the more I talked to people, the more people said, I didn't know that. I wasn't aware of that. And that started to build from there.
Tom, what's your connection to all this?
Sure. So I met Jim a number of months ago. I don't really remember when we met, but I had been doing education policy for a while. I've written for the Maryland Public Policy Institute, started the Frederick Classical Charter School here in Frederick. You know, I said, Jim, I really like what you're doing. Can I help? And got involved and, you know, really come at it as a concerned parent. This gender ideology, this lack of interest in academics is going to affect kids for the rest of their lives. And we really need to make sure the school system heads in the right direction. So I wanted to help.
You have kids in the system?
I don't. No, my kids are in private school. We avoided that because of the challenges.
Were they ever in public school?
My daughter was in kindergarten for less than a year because the principal there, who's now a high-ranking administration official, was not teaching reading correctly. They were using whole language and balanced literacy and told me that that was the best practice. This administrator, by the way, just announced about a month ago that the best practice is now scientifically based reading instruction, which is actually correct. And I have advocated for that 13 years ago. So when my daughter was in kindergarten. So it gives you an idea of how resistant to change this group is, right?
It sounds like you know an awful lot about this. What is your background? Do you have an educational background?
I don't. I have a weird hobby, I guess, that I've been researching and writing about these things for decades. And my real job is a software engineer. And,
wow.
Yeah. But I really have an interest in this because I saw when my wife actually started teaching in Montgomery County Public Schools, I was a math guy, a computer science guy, and she's a math person as well. And she started looking at the math and said, I don't understand why there isn't a lot of math in the math curriculum. They're trying to teach it this really odd way. So we started looking into it. And that was the year 2000. And so I developed this interest and I started looking at math, realized they weren't interested in academics. They were interested in other things and started looking at all the other subjects and found this theme that Jim has articulated so well, which is this lack of interest in academics and more interest in social emotional learning and pushing a particular point of view, ideological point of view. And it's not about the academics. It's about other priorities that are not the priorities that line up with what most parents want.
So, Jim, if what you're saying is true and they don't really push academics anymore, but more social behaviorism sort of agenda, what's happened to our academic proficiency? And when I was in the Maryland public school system, it was the best of the best. How is it now?
Well, it's unacceptable, I'll put it that way. And just to clarify, it's not that they're not pushing academics. It's just that it's not the priority that it once was any longer. We look at the statistics for, let's say, Frederick County, and we say, we're really happy our graduation rates are up at the high 90s now, 90%, 98%, and so forth, and that's a great thing. What's the quality of education they're graduating with? And when you look back on where we were, state does testing, as well as the school systems do testing. The latest testing I could get a hold of was the end of the school year 2021, right? And when you looked at where we had come from 2014 and you see a steady decline of academic proficiency, and then you looked at what had happened with the pandemic, which you think would get everybody's attention, math proficiency, for example, for all grades at all levels, right? Math proficiency was 19% at the end of 2020-21, according to the state's testing. When you look at that, you flip it on its side and you say, well, that means 81% of the people, students, are not capable of operating at grade level in math. And similar for science and English and other types of what you consider the academic disciplines, none of them were above 50%. So more than half of the students in the county at that time were not achieving at grade level for their particular subjects at all grades. And that got my attention. And I said, why isn't this more of a priority? It was declining prior to the pandemic. The pandemic made it worse by an exaggerated level. And yet that's not the focus of what you're doing. You're not focused on that. You're more concerned about putting gender expression into kindergarten, which is what next year will happen. Next year when they come out with the curriculums, the state standards, let me quote what the state standards will be concentrating on in kindergarten. Recognizing a range of ways people identify and express their gender. That's the
kindergartners?
For kindergartners.
What would a kindergartner know about gender?
Well, that they'll know what they tell them. That's the thing that parents need to know. Do you agree that that should be introduced to a child who hasn't got the context or the intellectual capacity and development to be able to understand what that means? And if you're going to teach it in terms of inclusiveness and tolerance and all the things that, you know, you remember the book, Everything I Needed to Know I Learned in Kindergarten, Put Things Away When You're Done with Them, or You Found Them, Share, and all that? Well, tolerance is one of those things, but there are so many better ways to introduce that to a 5- and 6-year-old than doing it through the focusing on gender expression, which a child is just not going to understand.
And what will be taught typically is, well, you may be assigned at birth a boy, which is the language they use, which is highly inaccurate. We don't assign kids their gender at birth. We observe it. We know it's more accurate than the flu test. We know what you are. It's very rare that kids would ever have this condition, 1 in 10,000 historically. But they're going to teach these kids, oh, an option for you might be that you are actually a girl. Only you know your truth, whether you're a boy or a girl. And that's very confusing for adults, much less kindergartners. And like Jim said, this is starting this August 1st of this year, a few months from now.
Okay, I have to understand. These are smart, intelligent educators, college-educated people who know the difference between a boy and a girl, and they know exactly what you just said. They know all of this. What is the benign, innocent explanation for why they're doing this? Why are they trying to teach our kindergartners about gender?
Well, they believe, from their belief system, they believe it's an issue of tolerance and being accepting of diversity. They can think that all they want, but the reality is kids don't have what's called gender constancy, which is the idea that it's a developmental milestone where a boy, you know, 5 years old and younger actually will think, oh, if I wear a dress, I become a girl. Like, they don't actually have a sense that it's just their boyness comes with that, right? Until they get about age 7, kids don't have this sense of gender constancy. Mm-hmm. So even if people view it as benign, it's not. It's confusing. And we know that kids that have developmental difficulties and autism often develop gender constancy later. So again, you're even just for your average kid, or especially for a kid that's got autism or another issue, they're going to be confused because they don't have that gender constancy. They don't know that changing clothes does not change your gender. If you now teach at age 5, oh, well, whatever you think changes your gender, oh my goodness, combine that with the developmental stage they're at, very confusing for everyone. So it's not benign, but that is what they think. They genuinely think that it's diversity, equity, inclusion, right? You hear this theme all the time, that this needs to be pushed at this age, and they're completely ignoring the harmful effects.
So it's not an education. It's not educational. It's ideological.
It's ideological. Yeah, there's no reason for this. Well, the guy who wrote, Ken Zucker, who wrote the chapter on gender dysphoria in the DSM, which is the manuals that lists all 300 mental disorders humans can get, right? All the psychologists use it. He said, this is iatrogenic. In other words, that's a fancy name for it's going to cause harm. It's going to lead kids towards actually developing gender dysphoria. Kids who wouldn't do it will now think they might actually be the thing that they're not, and they'll develop gender dysphoria. Then that will lead them to cross-sex hormones, puberty blockers, and medical surgeries.
It's a social contagion is the term that's used quite often, in that it feeds on itself. So as it's introduced, a child starts to accept this as being normal, especially if you've got a school system that's using language that said, as Tom put, it's in their policy that said, this is the sex you were assigned at birth, which implies that this was forced upon you when you have a choice at this point in time, right? Which scientifically and biologically you do not. You are either a male or a female. The school system 6 years ago, in a well-intentioned way, bought into this ideology and created a policy. And the policy was to create a welcoming environment for gender nonconforming and transgender students. And that's the policy that's in place today. It was put in 6 years ago. It hasn't been updated but once, and that was a couple of years ago, say 2019, I think it was updated in a minor way. It hasn't kept up with the science. It's extremely outdated, but it addresses only the pieces of the school system, only the transgender and gender nonconforming students. That's all it addresses, and it buys into this. And it doesn't talk about the impacts of everything that's happening to the 45,000 students that aren't gender nonconforming or transgender. And that's one of the things that we've been pushing for very heavily was, let's make sure that this policy addresses everything. But the school system is pushing back because they do buy into the ideology. And they do say that if we do anything at all that stigmatizes this small population of people who are gender nonconforming that's growing because of the way they're treating it, that's wrong. So everybody else has to make the accommodations. And so I've sort of gone off in a little bit of a different direction here, but that's the problem that's happening in the school system, is that they buy into it, they sell it, the students buy into it because every child will go through some sort of anxiety as they grow up and search for self-awareness. They're going to buy into what the school systems are telling them.
Let's speak to the parents here in Northern Frederick County and the grandparents who have kids in the Frederick County educational system. They've got to be seeing this. Are they seeing it? Do you think it's something they recognize?
No, I don't. I think particularly in Northern Frederick County, this is one of the reasons why we're here, to talk to you and to try to get the word out to people. So you need to be aware that if your child is at school and thinks that they might be another gender because of what they're seeing on TikTok or YouTube or what they're hearing from their friends and so forth, and they say, you know, maybe I am a little different than everybody else. If that child doesn't want their parents to know, the school system will not notify the parents, which we could get into in another question about the damage that can do, because mm-hmm. it is a harmful thing to do to parents and families. But I don't think parents are aware that this could be happening to their child, and the school system has restrictions on telling them that this is happening. They do not immediately require that the parents be aware that their child is exhibiting the symptoms of something called gender dysphoria. I think that parents are generally not aware that in sports, in interscholastic high school sports, that if you self-identify as a different sex than the one you were born with, you can compete on any sports team you want. So you have the ability in Frederick County as a biological male to say, you know what, I'm a girl, and go on any girls sports team and compete against them. Right today,
now
you can. And I don't think parents are aware that that's the policy.
males competing in women's sports in
not at this
County?
Time. Not at this
not
time.
Yet.
Not at this time. But if they did, they would be allowed. And we.
When did that change?
It was 6 years policy ago. From yeah. 6 years ago. But now, as it's growing, and you see these national cases out there now with Riley Gaines and other types of. Well, Leah Thomas competed against Riley Gaines. She was a national champion
yes.
until he stepped in, right?
Correct.
So now that this is out there in the national, someone somewhere at some point in time, because it's happening in other states, hasn't happened as far as I know in Maryland yet, but that will happen at some point in time. And parents need to know that that's the policy. And repeatedly, I've asked the board, individually and collectively, to tell us where they stand on this particular issue.
Yes.
Do you agree with it? And they've have not answered to this point. They've said we're waiting for legal cases to be decided.
So they have a policy they don't agree with. They won't publicly come out and say one way or the other. And they're telling you they're waiting for a legal ruling on it?
Well, they agree with the policy, I believe, because otherwise they would have made a change in it already. Or they would come out now and say, we think that particular piece isn't fair, so we're going to go back and we're going to revisit it. But they will not do that. And which is interesting because they have come out against parental notification. And there were plenty of court cases that were pending at that time and still are. On this particular case, I think they're actually hiding behind that because they know it's a very unpopular stance.
Yeah, same for bathrooms, right? Same thing.
I was thinking of Loudoun County when you mentioned that. I was thinking of what happened in Loudoun County with the girl that was raped by a boy that said he was a girl in the girl's bathroom.
Exactly.
And the school system transferred him to another school.
And he did it again.
And even now, I don't see any serious repercussions for that horrible thing that they did to that child.
This is what
two girls.
This is what
one.
Frederick County Public Schools lawyers hopefully are advising them. It's called foreseeable harm. We know this could happen. The liability the school system is taking on with not only the bathroom and the sports, because you can be injured in sports if you run up against a biological male in a contact sport if you're a girl. There is foreseeable harm all over this. And I don't know why the school system, just for its own liability, isn't taking a more cautious approach.
I think you said why. It's an ideology.
It's an ideology.
And you know, ideologies are something that you're willing to believe in to the point of ignoring truth.
Yeah.
And I find it very surprising. This is one of the reasons that I want to make sure the word gets out to everybody. Because my whole thing is, you know, people are reluctant to speak up. But if you can't speak up, show up, right? So we want you to come to the board meetings, and you don't have to say anything, but you have to show support for the people that will, that are trying to bring common sense back. When I look at what's happening today, I would be insulted if I was a parent and they said, well, we're not going to tell you if your child is exhibiting these symptoms of gender dysphoria or decides to transgender. We're actually going to support them, but we're not going to tell you because we're not sure you'll handle it properly. That's insulting to me. And I would be very, very upset. I had a daughter, let's say, that was working very hard on her soccer game or track or whatever happens to be in volleyball. And then all of a sudden she was going to be displaced because there was a biological male out there. Now, again, it hasn't happened, but the policy says...
in all of Maryland.
As far as I know, it hasn't happened. It's happened in other states, West Virginia. It's happened, Virginia, it's happened. So it's around us. It's in Pennsylvania. But these are the kinds of things that parents should say, you know what? I need to get to a school board meeting.
So was this policy a Maryland policy that was changed 6 years ago?
So this is Frederick County policy.
So what's the Maryland policy?
There's guidance. There's guidance that is along similar lines.
So they push it out to the schools.
Yeah, the schools can decide. So Frederick County doesn't have to do this. So there's only 5 counties in Maryland that have a policy similar to Frederick's. Most of the counties aren't.
And
Frederick
they are.
Has decided.
Do you know which ones they are?
I can name Montgomery County for sure. Mm-hmm. Is one. I have a list. Sorry, at home, and I don't
probably
remember.
Baltimore.
I would think Howard County.
Howard.
Yes. I don't want to guess at this point, but I know Carroll County has gone against this.
Yeah.
Carroll County went against the curriculum that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Right. You know what the state's reaction to that? The state's reaction was to say, well, we're going to pass a law that says that if you don't do what we say, we're going to cut your budget by 10% every month. So whatever funding we give you is going to be reduced by 10% until you comply. That's really moving the decision-making, the discretion that each individual school system has to the state level and taking it away. So every county would look the same at that point unless they were willing to lose 10% of their budget.
So you mentioned that you thought parents needed to show up at these board meetings and speak up.
Right. Well, not speak up. People are very reluctant to for a lot of different reasons. People are, you know, nobody likes to go up in public speak. I think it's not a natural thing for a lot of people. But if they show up for those people that do stand up, and there's quite a few of them that will, and show the support, because the people who are in favor of the policy today do show up. And we need to make sure that people who don't agree with the things that we're talking about now do show up at these meetings. One of the things that I would love the Board of Education to do is to conduct meetings outside of their headquarters. You know, move out of the Taj Mahal. Don't make people come to you. Take your board meeting and say, let's travel up to Thurmont. We're going to do our board meeting out of the auditorium in one of the high schools, or we're going to set up chairs in the gym so that we can make it easy. Because a lot of this stuff is being driven by the southern part of this county. The people in the northern part of the county, I think, have to have equal access to that. And it's not easy to drive down to attend a board meeting. You're not showing support if you watch it on TV. I'd love to see them get out and do something like that.
Even when they go to the meetings, I've noticed that right now, when I attended the last meeting, they spent 43 minutes talking about how they could change the public comment policy. They wasted 43 minutes of time talking about a policy that they then tabled.
Yeah.
And everybody in the room looked at each other and rolled their eyes and like, what is going on here? Well, it was clearly obvious that they were trying to find a way to get rid of parent comments.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but they're certainly not making it easy for parents to make comments, right? So when you think about what they did after the 43 minutes was they said, I think we'll let all the students talk first. So 37 people sign up to speak, 8 parents got to speak, unless they wanted to wait around till 10 o'clock at night. So that's not really allowing public comments. And in my mind, if you're going to hold a public meeting, it's for the benefit of the public. You may have certain things you're required to say and introduce to the public, but that's a checklist item. You should be opening up the floodgates for people to tell you what they're thinking. They have equal say and should have equal say in what's happening to their children when they send them off to school every day, and they're not making it easy.
And you know, when Brad Young ran the meetings, he would let the parents go first. He would extend it an hour, whatever was needed, right? And currently, the board president's not interested in doing that. They keep it, the irony, as you pointed out, they're trying to hold to about 30 minutes of public comments at the beginning of the meeting, but then they spend 43 minutes discussing that, where if they've just not discussed it and add that onto the time of public comments, we could have probably had it all done at the beginning of the meeting. So I think they need to really reconsider what they're doing. And I don't think kids should necessarily go first, right? I mean, if your child wants to speak, the parents need to show up early, like everybody else, and get in line like everybody else. So there's got to be a better way to do this than just saying you only get half an hour. And shouldn't it be a kind of a wake-up call to the board that so many people do now want to speak about this issue? We had, over 100 people last time stand with us and saying, don't do this policy you have. Your current policy doesn't make any sense. That's why people are coming out, right? It should be a sign to them that they need to reconsider the policy, which they're so far unwilling to do.
It occurs to me that we've talked about some very interesting things that are happening that a lot of parents don't know about. How can parents that have children in the system, how can they get plugged in and find out more information?
Well, one is they can start to read the things that are on transparencyandeducation.net, because we touch on academics. We touch on how integrated the principles of critical race theory are becoming. And we talk about what the board is doing. And we put suggestions on there that they may want to back up. We're saying the board needs to be more transparent. So one of the things is learn a little bit and do some of the research. And one of the ways is to look at Voices for Freedom or transparencyandeducation.net or Truth and Transparency. These are the types of things. That I think is one thing. They can send emails very easily to the board and to individual members of the board as a whole, to Superintendent Dyson. You can just do this very easily and say, this is how I think. You don't have to really go anywhere, but they pay attention to the emails that people send. I encourage people to talk to their, this is probably the most important thing. I encourage people to talk to their child's teachers. Talk to the teachers and find out what's going on, and talk to your child and find out what they're experiencing. They'll get an education pretty quickly. I remember talking to one parental group who was telling me that their child had been just very good at doing their homework, and then they came home one day and they didn't have any homework and wasn't doing their homework and so forth. And the mother was telling me, I confronted my child and she dropped to the floor and put her hands over her head. She thought that was rude, but she asked, what are you doing? Stop that. And the brother of the daughter said, Mom, she's going to her safe space, which is what they're taught at school, that if you get confronted and you don't like it, drop down and go to your safe space, go to your protected space and put your hands over your head. And I found that kind of hard to believe. I said, that's a little extreme. But the other parents all said, no, children are experiencing this sort of thing. So the type of things that are happening in the classroom, to me, even if it happens just in one classroom, that's not teaching the right way a child should be confronting any type of disagreement, let's say, or something they don't want to do. But if parents talk to their child, they'll become aware of these things, and they'll start to say, you know what, I got to talk to my child's teacher and find out if this is true. So, you know, that's one of the things that they can do. But there's a number of ways they can do. I will just close out by saying, if you believe that some of the things we're talking about today, you want to be heard, you don't necessarily have to say anything, but you do have to support, as I said this a number of times, the people that are standing up and are saying something by showing up. And I think that that can send a powerful message that we can do the same types of things that Carroll County did. We can control our own policies without the pressure of the unions and the school board, the Maryland State Department of Education. And so we can make changes here because we have that ability if enough people want to do it.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember the silent majority of the 70s. That was a political catchphrase, and I think that's what we're looking at. I think if you polled all of the parents in Frederick County, I think you'd find a completely different attitude than the policies that are being implemented.
Oh, very much. I walked around my neighborhood just passing out flyers and letting people know about this, and almost everyone said, I had no idea, and this makes no sense. There's a gap in knowledge there.
It's so beyond logic sometimes. Biological males competing in women's sports is the one that I think most people say that doesn't make any sense. But it's so beyond logic and common sense that most people think, well, this can't continue. Somebody will fix this, and so forth. And they don't get involved. The problem is that it does not change. It does not change until people speak up and say, this is wrong, and we want it to be something other than what it is today.
Well, and I think after all we've been through in the last 3 years, people are worn out, and they just want to put their hands over their ears and get in their safe space.
Yeah, get in their safe space.
You know, I think that's kind of where everybody, I've talked to people, and let me close this out by asking you a question. You took your kids out of the school system.
Yes. Right?
If you think your kid is being incorrectly educated, what are the alternatives for a parent?
So right now, not many. I mean, if you have the means to send your child to a private school, that's definitely a great option. There are charter schools, but charter schools in Maryland are not real charter schools that have total freedom, so they're going to be forced to do this stuff as well. In other states, charter schools will be an option.
Private, yeah, homeschooling. There's no private schools formed by parents. You know, rightly or wrongly, down in the South, they fixed that problem by forming parent-led private schools.
Right, yeah, like a homeschooling co-op
or
type
a pod.
Of thing.
Yeah,
pod.
Pods,
right. Yeah, which that's an option here. There are folks that are doing that, sure.
Yeah, we have a client of ours here at the radio station, Family by Design, it's called, okay. And they are one of the leading, it's Walkersville Homeschooling, and they're one of the leading homeschoolers in Maryland. As a matter of fact, it's Dan Cox's dad, Gary, who goes to the legislature and advocates for homeschooling in Maryland all the time. And he's told me the horrendous stories about the things that they're doing to homeschooling to try to create this. But I don't want to get us off track. I want parents to hear there are alternatives. I mean, not stuck in the system.
You're not stuck, but if you want to going to school, a physical building experience, most kids go to public schools right now, and we've got to fix that ultimately. But yes, I very much support all the school choice options, vouchers, all that, so we can get kids out of the schools. I never thought that gender identity, it was not even on my radar until a few years ago, would be the thing that brought us to school vouchers and more school choice. But my prediction is we're going to see a lot more interest in that because parents want to get away from this.
And the school board itself, with the exception of one, does not support school choice.
Right.
So if you went and asked them, do you support things like educational savings accounts or personal use of the money following the child or types of programs that would allow them to have more discretion about where they use their educational tax dollars, only one person on the board supports that. All the others have said, no, school choice is going to harm the public schools. And in a public school system that isn't held accountable to academic proficiency, I think that maybe we should be looking at alternatives at a very, very, very aggressive rate and try to make that difference.
And I think you just nailed it. The key word is money. It's all about the money. You know, follow the money. Yeah. I don't care whether you're talking about gender reassignment surgery and puberty blockers, which is estimated to be a $4 billion a year industry next year. It was $300 million last year. Do the math on that. Or you're talking about funding coming from the state, having, like Carroll County, having a 10% reduction every month because you wanted to have your own curriculum.
Right, yeah, well, right. Jim said it so well. What's the argument against school choice? It will hurt the public schools. Okay, what does that have to do with anything? Is it helping kids or not? Well, yeah, of course it would help kids. They could have better educations. That's the criteria we should be using. Not, oh, well, they might lose students as the regular public schools. Who cares? Like, if the kids are finding the right spot to go to, it's okay if you have a reduction in your enrollment because the kids are not going to stay at a private school that isn't serving them well. They'll eventually find the right place to go. And that should be the priority. But that's not the priority of many on the board.
Jim, give us your information again for Transparency and Education.
It's transparencyandeducation.net. There's a place in there that you can sign up for our newsletter, which we publish biweekly, most times weekly, if there's enough going on. It lets people know about when the meetings are, how to attend a meeting, how to view a meeting, and all these things. And there's a lot of good stuff out there for people to get educated. And there are other programs like this, which so anybody can take the email and send it to me that's on the website, and I'll be able to provide information on anything that they're looking for or act as an advocate for them with the school system. If they're going through some sort of problem with the school system, there are ways that we can help to get information for them if they're not getting it. So,
Tom?
That's great. Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah, really go to Jim's site. He's really leading the way here, and I think folks need to sign up. And like Jim said, we have lawyers, we have education policy guys like me, we have folks that are really knowledgeable about politics. We can help you. You don't have to be the expert. We can find the people for you that will help your child.
So on behalf of the silent majority, and I'm not so silent anymore because I went to 3 board meetings so far and my eyes have been opened. So on behalf of that silent majority, I want to say thank you, Jim. Thank you, Tom, for the advocacy, the activism that you're doing on behalf of our kids and on behalf of all of Northern Frederick County.
Well, thank you very much for your support. Yeah. We'd love to come on again and provide updates. If people have questions, you know, we can certainly answer them too.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This interview is available at WTHUradio.com. Click on Audio Vault, Info, Local to listen or share with your friends.